Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Associated Affiliate Cricket Podcast. We have a lot to talk about this week. The Asia Cup has been run, as has World Cricket League Division 5. We'll be previewing the World 2020, both the men's and the women's, and briefly talking about African Division 3, which starts in a couple of weeks. And to do that with me is my regular co-host, Andrew Nixon. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
Andrew, let's start with the Asia Cup. Afghanistan were playing for the first time that they've been involved. Obviously, it's not the first time Associates have been involved. And had a bit of a good win, but probably struggled for the most part in this tournament.
They played Bangladesh first up and were quite competitive up until about the halfway point in the Pakistan innings. They had Pakistan at 117 for 6, and it was looking like they were going to bowl Pakistan out for maybe less than 200 and come back, but Umar Akmal played a superb innings, scored 102 from 89 balls, and in the end, the target of 248 was just too much for Afghanistan.
Yeah, drop catches really hurt them in that match. Umar Akmal, I think, was dropped in about 20, and that, I guess, was probably the difference in the end. Yeah, but they came back to Bangladesh really well.
Yeah, the game against Bangladesh, it shows perhaps why Bangladesh have been avoiding Afghanistan all this time, allegedly. Afghanistan lost some wickets early. Mohammad Shahzad, who usually one of their top batsmen, fell in the third over, just scored two. But Asghar Stanikzai scored 90 not out. Samuel Ishanwara scored 81. The pair of them put on about 160 for the sixth wicket, a superb partnership. And Bangladesh were just unable to chase. They lost both openers within the first two overs of their innings and never really recovered from there.
And probably the less said about the other matches, the better. Afghanistan's basically collapsed in both.
Yeah, comprehensively outplayed by both Sri Lanka and India. But some good experience gained and some good match practice ahead of the World 2020, despite it being 50-over cricket.
And do you think they'll be invited back, I guess, is the other question. They did certainly make an impression.
There has been some talk about whether the Asia Cup will continue. I mean, I'd like it to continue. I do like more meaningful tournaments in one-day cricket. And if the Asia Cup does come back, it'd be hard to exclude the team that's finished fourth and include the team that's finished fifth. You now have three Asian associates with ODI status, obviously Hong Kong and the UAE, as well as Afghanistan. I can't see for one minute it being expanded to seven or even eight teams, but maybe six teams as it was in 2004-2008 would be good. With you have the ACC trophy as a qualifier for it, and get two associates playing in alongside the four full members. And I mean, I'm hopeful that if it does continue, that one or two associates will be included.
World Cricket League Division 5, it's been run and won by Jersey, who went undefeated throughout. I think it was fairly clear throughout the tournament that the two teams that were significantly better than the rest, that was Jersey and Malaysia, and they're both fairly worthy qualifiers to the World Cricket League Division 4, which had been due.
I think we predicted beforehand that Malaysia would do well, and we were a bit puzzled as to who else would join them as being promoted. Very disappointing performance by Guernsey, who lost every match in the round-robin phase and finally got a consolation win in the fifth-place playoff. Jersey and Malaysia, definitely the two best teams. You were there, of course, for the round-robin stage at least. What were your thoughts on the tournament?
I'll start with Guernsey, actually, because they're an interesting case because they'd lost almost all their matches. Probably four of them they probably could have and perhaps should have won. They were chasing twice, I think, scores less than 150. They were chasing 140 against Cayman Islands. They collapsed for 107. They lost two games when both Nigeria and Jersey were 8 and 9 wickets down. They chasing against Tanzania. Again, it was a low score, 163, which they lost by 48 runs. So I think Guernsey, they're a very inexperienced side that they had there, and they'll probably come back next time, a bit like Jersey's come back from the lower leagues.
Guernsey obviously missing the experience Jeremy Frith with both bat and ball to some extent.
Yeah, and Lee Sabedent was injured in one match as well. He was their top scorer, as well as probably their best bowler. So they were a bit disappointing, but on the other hand, they might have been pushing Malaysia if things had panned out slightly differently. The other teams didn't hugely impress me. The Nigeria and Tanzania both had some reasonably good pace bowlers that were quite sharp. Their batting looked very shaky, technically not great. Cayman Islands had very good spinners, but again, their batting was particularly weak. Whereas there were both in Jersey and Malaysia some very impressive performances. Ben Stevens particularly was dominant with the bat. He scored 550s and a 40-odd, was a man of the series. Very good with the ball as well. I think he was the highest wicket taker for Jersey. Anthony Hawkins-Kay was very good with the ball for Jersey as well. And we saw some very good batting performances from Malaysia. They really bullied the weaker sides in this tournament. Nasir Shafiq and Shafiq Sharif were just smashing players everywhere.
Yeah, Shafiq scored 151 against the Cayman Islands, of course.
Yeah, and Shafiq Sharif on the opening day, I think, scored 73 off 34 balls or something like that. So they were very good. With the ball, Hassan Muhammad has been very good form recently, but he isn't the most accurate bowler, and I think against Jersey they were able to use that against him, whereas he just blasted some other teams out. But they were quite good with the spin as well, and Durrani was very good with the ball, as was the young Pavandeep Singh, left-arm orthodox spinner, who looks very impressive prospect. So both Malaysia and Jersey should go to WCL4, hoping they can stay up, I would think.
Yeah, it's in Singapore, so you expect Malaysia to be quite familiar with the conditions. Obviously, they're playing Singapore a lot.
Yeah, it's probably going to be hot again. It was particularly hot this week. It was 35 degrees every single day, quite humid. Jersey's obviously done very well to come out of their winter into the heat and to deal with that. Relatively smoggy as well, which might be a problem in Singapore.
Yeah, in terms of the sort of organisation of the tournament, what were your thoughts on that? No, I think it's the first one of these tournaments you've attended at this level.
It is. It was much the same as the World Cup qualifiers in New Zealand. The grounds in Kuala Lumpur are generally in the suburbs. You have to kind of make your way up there. Traffic in Kuala Lumpur is quite difficult, so that's problematic, but it's not that hard once you get the hang of where you need to go. The facilities for spectators are pretty limited. I only got to two of the grounds. Kinrara has a pavilion, which is you can sit in, but it's quite hot. The Royal Selangor Club was an interesting one because it has a very nice pavilion and is actually quite good for spectators, but at least on one occasion, particularly when the Jersey fans were there, and there was quite a number of Jersey fans, which was great to see. I think there was about 15 of them. They asked them to leave the pavilion and sit in the sun, which was a little bit disappointing. If you're hosting this national tournament, you really hope that the spectators should be allowed to sit in the pavilion and put money over their bar. But this is something that seems to happen occasionally. The ICC doesn't seem too fussed on whether spectators turn up or not. Malaysia had a few spectators turn up, so the number of their young juniors turned up to watch, not so much the general fans, but again, 20 or 30 people watching, so it wasn't completely lonely at the grounds. And yeah, I quite enjoyed it as a person being there to watch cricket.
Was it covered much in the local media that you saw?
I can't say I was reading the local media. There was one media representative that the ICC had hired who was doing match reports for them and sending them out. And the New Straits Times has been, that I'd seen on the internet, putting articles up. But they didn't have someone there to actually comment on the matches. And so it was really just the one person who would go to one match per day and do a couple of interviews, and that was the sum extent of media coverage. And sadly, during this tournament, I think we should mention that very unfortunate that Keith Dennis, the former chairman of Jersey Cricket, passed away. So our commiserations to his wife, Jenna, and all the people involved in that. It's very sad. He was obviously a driving force behind Jersey Cricket for a number of years, including getting them into ICC membership.
Yeah, a giant figure in Channel Islands cricket, really. He was, as you say, instrumental in having both Jersey and Guernsey break away from being part of English cricket in, under the jurisdiction of the ECB and becoming ICC members in their own right. And yes, it's a very sad loss.
Let's go to America's Division 3, Andrew. There were three teams involved, Argentina, Belize and Panama, and Argentina, probably not surprisingly, were fairly dominant throughout the 3 days.
Pretty much outclassed all the other two teams. Won most of their matches relatively convincingly, and I don't think there was any surprise that they won, especially they playing on their home ground. The other, Belize and Panama, are probably not as used to playing on turf pitches as Argentina are. Obviously, Argentina has a few turf wicket grounds, including the Hurlingham Club where this was played. And yeah, Argentina, by a long way, the strongest side in the tournament. Panama and Belize played their matches against each other, but yeah, outclassed by Argentina.
Let's get on to our previews, Andrew. There's some fairly big tournaments coming up. Well, there's one quite big tournament and one really small tournament we probably aren't going to get results from. World 2020 starts tomorrow, I believe. Whether that's still tomorrow when I finally get to edit this podcast, I'm not sure. Let's begin with Group A. It has four teams, obviously, because this, again, begins with a qualifier, not the actual tournament itself. So we have to, again, watch the associate teams battle each other out to try and actually get to the tournament proper. Bangladesh, Afghanistan, Hong Kong and Nepal are in Group A. And obviously Bangladesh will go into this with as the favourites, but they certainly aren't a long way ahead of the teams they're involved with.
No, obviously we saw Afghanistan beat Bangladesh in the Asia Cup, as we mentioned earlier. So you'd expect Afghanistan certainly to challenge Bangladesh for that spot in the Super 10 stage, as the ICC call it, or the actual tournament, as everybody else calls it. Hong Kong and Nepal. Nepal, it sort of depends which Nepal turns up, whether they can push the top two teams in this group. It tends to be if Paris Katka fails with the bat, then the rest of the team collapses. So they're very much over-reliant on him. Hong Kong, I'm very wary about ever underestimating Hong Kong. They have some very talented players. As we saw them beat Zimbabwe in one of the warm-up games the other day, and also beating the Netherlands in a warm-up game. So they're going into the tournament itself in some pretty decent form.
Yeah, Hong Kong will play Bangladesh last match of that group, so that could possibly come down to giving them the opportunity to, if not win through, if they've beaten Afghanistan, at least tie up the points table between Bangladesh, Afghanistan, Hong Kong. Afghanistan, of course, played Bangladesh in the very first game, which will become possibly is probably the most interesting game in the group, because obviously Afghanistan will be the favourites to beat Bangladesh if anyone is going to do so.
Yeah, definitely. Although Afghanistan, once again, are missing Hamid Hassani, went out of the game in the Asia Cup against Bangladesh with an injury, and he's not fully fit for this tournament. It's a shame that he keeps seems to be missing these tournaments. But Afghanistan has some good strength in depth, and he will be, if not completely replaced, and certainly partially replaced by their other pace bowlers.
Group B, Zimbabwe is obviously the full member that everyone will be going from. It has Ireland in it, Netherlands and the UAE. And Zimbabwe, obviously they lost to Hong Kong, but beat Afghanistan in the warm-ups. They have a lot of talent, but they're actually fairly uneven as a side, I suspect. So it might actually depend on which Zimbabwe turns up on the day, particularly when they play Ireland.
Yeah, they're sort of reliant on maybe a couple of players to perform well, especially Hamilton Masakadze. If he doesn't come off, then their batting's pretty below par. Yeah, Ireland are certainly the favourites in this group. You know, I wouldn't rule out UAE and the Netherlands beating Zimbabwe as well. Obviously, Netherlands have beaten Bangladesh a couple of times in recent years, so you'd expect them to be competitive against Zimbabwe. The UAE had a reasonably competitive game against Bangladesh in the warm-up, so they might be able to push Zimbabwe as well. We could find ourselves with a full member actually finishing last in this tournament. which would be an interesting thing to see what the ICC do, whether Zimbabwe would still get automatic entry into the next World 2020 or not.
Oh, they will.
Oh, yeah, they will. It'd just be interesting to see them try, see the ICC try and defend why Zimbabwe get automatic entry. But, yeah, you know, as I say, Zimbabwe could finish last. And Ireland haven't had the best of times in warm-up matches recently. They've lost against some teams that they really should be beating.
Yeah, Ireland's form probably should worry them a little bit. They obviously split the series against West Indies a little while back, but it's not out of the question that they can lose either to UAE or the Netherlands, and that could throw all sorts of possibilities up. And Netherlands have obviously been boosted just now by having Tom Cooper back in, and they've got Van der Gooten as well.
Paul Radley from the National EU described it as a tactical injury, so even I thought that was a bit cynical. Yeah, good to see Tom Cooper back in the squad. It certainly strengthens their batting a lot and gives them a chance at perhaps performing pretty well and maybe even getting through to that Super 10 stage.
And again, the first match of the group is Zimbabwe and Ireland, so difficult start, an interesting start. Hopefully the rest of the group stage won't be fairly dry if the first match is decisive.
Yeah, it's a bit risky putting the potential deciding matches first up. If the ICC know that one match is likely to decide something, they usually try and schedule that for the end of the stage rather than the beginning. But hopefully the rest of the group will still have something to play for.
And the Women's World 2020 is worth mentioning as well. Ireland's the only associate member in that 10-team competition. They probably couldn't have got a harder group if they'd chosen the teams themselves to play against England, Australia, Pakistan and South Africa. But they have beaten South Africa and Pakistan recently, or at least one of those teams.
Yeah, they'll certainly be targeting Pakistan and South Africa as the most likely teams for them to beat. I don't see them competing too much against England or Australia. Ireland are very inexperienced at this level in women's cricket. This will be the first global tournament they've played in since, I think, 2005. Maybe wrong in that, but yeah, I certainly hold out less hope for the Ireland women's team than I do for the men's team.
Andrew, I did want to speak before we get on to Africa Division 3 about the quality of coverage that we're expecting in this tournament. We're already kind of seeing the same condescending attitudes, particularly in England.
Yeah, the word minnows gets bandied around a lot at this time of year. As I've said many times, when people use that word, they just come across as being condescending, patronising and outright offensive. It just seems a shorthand for your teams I don't think should be at the tournament, which I think probably is the case. The more you actually talk to players who play for these countries and people involved in cricket with these countries, the more you realise just how offensive they find the terms. They accept that they're the weaker teams in the tournament, accept that they're the outsiders for the tournament. But that word minnow, it just seems to carry so much baggage and offensiveness that I really do think it's time people stopped using it. And, you know, yeah, not everybody is aware of the word associates, but there's better words to use than minnow, outsider, weaker teams, you know, anything like that. You don't have to use a word that so many people find outright offensive.
Yeah, and even as a taxonomy, it's not actually a very accurate description of these teams unless you think that these are the only teams that exist in world cricket, because minnows are not the smallest fish in the ocean, but they're significantly smaller than the majority of them. And Ireland is and the Netherlands and the UAE, those sorts of teams, they aren't minnows if you're comparing them to fish. They're full-sized fish that are much smaller than the whale sharks and the big fish that are actually swimming around in the four members.
Yeah, I mean, if Ireland are a minnow, what are the Falkland Islands? Yeah. plankton, I assume. Single cell bacteria. And but yeah, it's like I say, it's an offensive term, and it really is time. People grew up and stopped using it.
And Sky's coverage, a bit disappointing to hear that the warm-up games will be live, England's warm-up games, while the tournament itself is on the red button.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the red button is basically the interactive stuff that sits behind the main channel, and on three occasions, Sky are showing warm-up games and on the main channel on Sky Sports 2, whilst on the red button are the actual tournament games in the first round. It's a bit silly. Sky Sports actually has four main channels, so they could have at least could have showed the warm-up games on Sky Sports 2 and put the tournament games on Sky Sports 3, but no, they're probably showing one of the 100 football games they show every week at some point. And yeah, it's extremely disappointing. Also, BBC Radio are only covering the tournament from the Super 10 stage onwards. They're not covering any of the first round games. The BBC is the national broadcaster for parts of Ireland, for Northern Ireland, which is part of the UK. So you at least expect the BBC to be covering Ireland's games in the first round, and they're not doing. It's all very disappointing, and it's just part of how this tournament format that the ICC have come up with, as much as they want to pretend that it's the first round of a 16-team tournament, we all know it's the qualifier for a 10-team tournament, and the worldwide media is treating it as such.
Yeah, and as we've also mentioned before, that it's extremely kind of self-defeating to do this, because these are the nations that they could be promoting cricket in, particularly Hong Kong, given... Well, until recently, they were hoping to grow into China. Comments from Giles Clark seem to indicate in an interview that it's pie in the sky stuff to try and promote into China and the United States, and that we need to focus our resources on the full members, Zimbabwe and the West Indies.
Which is just crap, basically. as I think you've said before and I've said, the market in most of the full members is pretty much at saturation point. Everybody who likes cricket, who is going to like cricket, already likes cricket. You're not going to expand the market much. Maybe in Zimbabwe, maybe to some extent in the West Indies. But outside of that, if you want to expand the market, if you want to make more money, which I believe the full members actually like money, then you have to expand to outside of the current closed shop full member circle and get more teams involved in actual tournaments, not pseudo qualifying rounds of tournaments.
Yeah, and Zimbabwe, the West Indies, without wanting to disparage them, they're particularly poor nations or collection of nations without particularly large economies. So even if they were to double the amount of cricket and money they'll coming out of those nations, 10 times the money is coming out of Zimbabwe, it's still a drop in the ocean compared to what you could potentially get out of the United States, with even a really small percentage of the population of the United States playing cricket, just because the United States is a really big country with a really large amount of money.
Yeah. we said this before. I'm sure we'll continue to say it again. It's all very disappointing.
Let's go on to African T20 Division 3. It'll be starting from March 22nd. The teams involved are Rwanda, Gambia, Morocco, Sierra Leone, and Swaziland. The tournament will be in Johannesburg in South Africa. Any predictions, Andrew?
It's quite hard to pick a winner here, mostly because the reports coming out of ICC Africa tournaments are such that we don't really know much about these teams. Sierra Leone have had some good under-19 players a few years ago, and I'd expect that they might be coming through now into the senior side. So Sierra Leone, perhaps favourites. I know Rwanda are very confident going into the tournament. They've employed a professional coach recently who's also going to be playing for the team. I think he's been living in Rwanda for a few years now and is qualified to play for them. So Rwanda and Sierra Leone are probably the favourites for promotion.
Yeah, obviously only one team will be going up to Division 2. Other news, Oman has put in a request for associate membership in the ICC meeting in June. They had a tour by the ICC, which seemed to indicate that they were doing, they impressed the ICC's officials.
Yeah, Oman have been quite a strong team for a number of years now. They were actually prevented from becoming an associate before now because one of the requirements for associate membership is that you are the top-ranked affiliate in your region. And, of course, Afghanistan were an affiliate up until last year. So now Afghanistan are an affiliate. This opens the Afghanistan are an associate, sorry. This opens the door for Oman. And they've got a reasonably strong league there. They're starting to do a little better at getting more homegrown players into teams rather than relying on their expatriate community. They've got a ground with turf wickets now, and they're developing quite strongly. As with Afghanistan, women's cricket is perhaps an area for concern, as it does tend to be in this part of the world, sadly. But aside from that, I don't see any barriers to them achieving associate membership.
Afghanistan has also signed a memorandum of understanding with Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka in general has actually been doing a lot of good work recently. They've hosted tours from Nepal and Nigeria before WCL5 and Hong Kong, which is good to see.
Very good to see Sri Lanka supporting associate cricket in this way. I'm not exactly sure what the terms of the memorandum of understanding are. Hopefully, there's a potential of some regular games between Sri Lanka and Afghanistan. Afghanistan need more ODIs and 2020 internationals against the full members, and perhaps we could even see Afghanistan touring Sri Lanka and playing some matches against the top Sri Lankan domestic sides, maybe even in 3-day and 4-day cricket.
And finally, the North American Cricket Championship was run, and the Canadian team, this was by the American Cricket Federation, we should note, the Canadian team from Toronto defeated the Midwest Cricket Conference in the three games that were played.
I think your Canadian club cricket probably is just a little bit stronger than US club cricket, but it's good to see a tournament run like this. The USACA have failed at running domestic tournaments pretty much in the last few years, whereas the American Cricket Federation have come along and decided to do this and just done it. Rather than have a plan to run a tournament, they've just decided to, pull the socks up and run a tournament. And by all accounts, it was a very well-organised tournament played on a pretty good facility in Arizona. And I believe they're about to. Plugging a upcoming future announcements about American domestic cricket, and hopefully they're going to be running a proper national league this season. And it'd be interesting to see what happens with their request to the ICC to review the governance of cricket in the USA that we spoke about on the last episode.
Indeed, that's all I have, Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you, Russ, as always.